There we go. The mute button's hiding for me today. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Not really a whole lot of specific topics running tonight, but if you'd like to call in, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. So I wanted to hit a few things for sure. The first is the special election that just happened. And wow, were the results really amazing to me. I really didn't see the race coming out the way it did. And it's interesting. The independent candidate, John Mark Hack, had been outspent about 20-1. There was about $500,000 in the race, and at least that's what the estimates were. I haven't seen any updates on that. And Hack had raised only about $25,000 of that money. And getting outspent 20-1, in theory, you're going to, well, I have lots of theories on all this different stuff and political analysis and whatever, but 20-1, you're not going to win. And that's pretty obvious. 20-1 is a huge obstacle to get over. I mean, that's a lot. And it's unfortunate that these races have so much money in them. I talked on our sister broadcast, the Ed Springsteen Show, earlier this week about this, that it's amazing the amount of money involved in these races these days. And I've talked on a few other things about this. The rule of thumb previously was that for a state house seat, the salary of a state house rep was about $35,000 a year. And to win a state house seat in general cost you about $35,000. So basically, the race was half of the salary that you were going to receive over the period of the race. State Senate races, anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000. The salary there is about $50,000. So again, it's about half or a little less of your salary you're going to get in that four-year term to win that office, or to have a campaign with enough money to win that office, I should say. And money doesn't guarantee squat. And that is one of the lessons from this special election, is that I believe the last numbers I had seen were that the Republicans had spent more money. Now, unfortunately for Lyon Cruz, who I've mentioned before, I know personally, and I like Lyon. Unfortunately for Lyon Cruz, most of his money not come through the campaign. And the problem with that is, as a campaign, one key thing, and understand, I've run campaigns, and I've helped people with campaigns, and I've advised on campaigns. Unfortunately, all for free. I don't get paid for this. But one of the key things for a campaign is that you have to control the message. You have to be able to be the one that says, this is our campaign message. These are our talking points. These are what we want to hammer home. And when you have that outside money coming in, first of all, you're not allowed legally to coordinate with that outside money. So the Republicans spending money from their outside groups aren't allowed to ask the campaign, hey, campaign, what's the best way to spend our money? And the Democrats, same thing, the money that came in externally for them. Hey, Democrats, you know, how's it best spent in this race? You're not allowed to ask the campaigns themselves how to spend the money. That's why it is called an independent expenditure, right? It's independent of the campaign. And it's really kind of amazing to me, given the quality and the caliber of the candidates that were involved in this race, and I mean no disrespect to the Kay who won, but based on what I had been reported in the media, now again, I am not in that district, I had not seen anything directly, but based on what was reported in the media, it looked like he was the weakest candidate, and he won. His basic campaign was, I'm from here, I care about farmers, and I'm a Democrat. And there's been lots of theories thrown around as to how Lyon Cruz lost the race. Because his was, at least early on, the stuff that he was in control of was, hey, I'm a CPA, our state has financial problems, elect me, I'll be the only guy who actually understands finances that is in the House. Not a bad message. You know, and John Mark Hack, he was running on a platform. He had 10 points on his platform, very well outlined. Now, as a campaign manager, I would say 10 points is too many. I think that 3 is the optimal number in any campaign. And I've explained this to many candidates, that 3 is the magic number. But regardless, it's very interesting to me the way this race came out. So the Democrat, Kay, got 44% of the vote. Lyon Cruz got 34% of the vote. And John Mark Hack, the independent, got about 21.5%. And I find it very interesting, the amount of money that was spent in this race. Getting outspent 20-1 and being able to pull 21.5% says something significant about the electorate. I think the electorate in general, there's this growing middle that is just fed up with the Republicans and Democrats. And I see that in the stuff that I do, and for those that may be new to the show and don't know, I am the chairman of the Libertarian Party of Kentucky, and I've served in that role. I've run for office. I've been a campaign manager. I've done, if it has to do with politics and a party, I've pretty much done the role within the Libertarian Party. But we see a trend now where there's a lot of people who are very, very upset with the Republicans and Democrats alike. You know, in Kentucky in general, the national platform of the Republicans is obviously more popular. And that's why both of our senators are Republican, and why 5 of the 6 states, or excuse me, U.S. congressional seats are Republican. And also in part because those races are so big money. I mean, so, so, so big money that an independent or third party does not have a legitimate chance of winning. And I'll be the first to admit that. I mean, I ran in 2011. I ran for a statewide office. I was outspent somewhere around 200 or 300 to 1. I can't even remember anymore. I ran statewide for the office of treasurer on a platform of getting rid of the treasurer's office. That was my platform. It was straightforward, simple. This office doesn't work. It doesn't do anything anymore. It was required. They tried to get rid of it in the past. I don't want to go over all my campaign stuff, but the point is I had a platform, and my opponents pretty much didn't. It was very interesting, the race. And, again, I was outspent significantly because I had to spend the vast majority of my campaign money simply getting on the ballot. I spent approximately $17,500 to get onto the ballot, and I had about $3,000 left to actually campaign with. So I had about a $20,000 campaign. And, you know, I think, though, that though I lost and though John Mark Hack lost, I think that these third party and independent campaigns play a key role in actually starting to solve problems in the state, even though the candidate loses. And I can show you historically, probably one of the best examples that I love to bring up, because some others, specifically Republicans, like to bring it up and claim that Ross Perot cost George H.W. Bush his reelection bid, and also supposedly cost Bob Dole his bid against Clinton. Now, I have a different take on that, obviously. I think that what we saw for George H.W. Bush, his problem was he broke his promise. It was the whole read my lips, no new taxes. And there is a significant faction within the Republican Party who is for fiscal, you know, no, lower taxes. Let's just sum it up that way. They're for lower taxes. And, you know, anytime you work against that a base within your party, that base is not enthusiastic. They don't work as hard. Oftentimes they don't show up at the polls. And in 1992, I think that that's what we saw, was that Perot being in the race had a platform, and it was pretty good. And honestly, if he hadn't dropped out of the race and had the conspiracy theory stuff about how the Bushes were threatening his family and all that stuff, if he hadn't done that, I think he would have won because he had the money. I mean, he dumped a lot of money into that race. And unfortunately, politics does take money. It's just simply a matter of you have to be able to get your message out in a way that you're not completely drowned out and in a way that the media at least pays somewhat attention so you can get some what's known as earned media. And so it's unfortunate but true that you have to be able to raise money to win political office. That's just the way it is. And I've worked with Republican candidates and Democrat candidates, you know, just on the side and advice and whatever. And I've told folks, you can't win a race, especially in a two-way race. You cannot win if you're getting outspent more than about 4 or 5 to 1. The problem is that your message starts getting lost in the clutter of the campaign with your opponent's messages being on TV or radio or in the mail or whatever they are way, way more often. And it makes it so your message gets lost. Now, the other side of that, again, here we just saw with this race with Lyon Cruz and, $500,000 state house race for what is essentially, a year and a half term-ish? Not even. Is that big money, the main money, didn't win the election. And there's some folks that have claimed that Hack being in the race somehow caused Lyon Cruz to lose. Now, if you add their two totals together, it does total over 50%. It's 55% of the vote, a little more, a little less, whatever, about 55%. However, that's assuming that every single vote that came to Hack came specifically from Republicans. And that's a pretty lofty assumption, really. I mean, if you think about it, an independent candidate, even if they lean Republican or lean Democrat, is going to pull some independents that wouldn't have voted just because they're independents. You're going to pull some, let's say they're more Republican, right? Well, they're going to pull some of those conservative Democrats. And some of those conservative Democrats are conservative Democrats just because they can't stand to be Republicans for whatever reason, whether it's my mama and daddy always said the Republicans were bad, so I'm not a Republican. Or, you know, for some legitimate reason, you know, can't stand the Republican Party's two-facedness on issues, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. You're pulling in people that probably wouldn't have voted. Or, if nothing else, you can't say that those people definitely all would have voted for a Republican. So in this scenario, you're talking about 75%-ish of the independent vote would have had to have come from the Republican in order for the Republican to win. I don't see that happening. In libertarian campaigns, the studies have been done, you know, what limited studies have been done, suggest that of the people that vote for a libertarian, 50% of those who come out and vote for a libertarian would not have otherwise voted were there not a libertarian on the ballot, okay? So you start right there. That chunk of people just doesn't exist otherwise. Then of the other 50%, that half that would have voted anyway, libertarians take somewhere either 50-50, right, from Republican and Democrat, Or worst case for the Republicans, and I understand how this could happen if a libertarian were to focus solely on fiscal issues, that a libertarian would take up to 70% from the Republican and only 30% from the Democrat. Well, you're still nowhere close to the 75% in this particular instance that would have been required to throw the election one way or the other. And so at the end of the day, and Republicans are really bad about this. Democrats do it some, but Republicans are really bad about this. And it's blaming other people. They never, ironically, the party that claims to be for personal responsibility, although I know it's not, but that's another story, they claim it, is always looking to place blame on someone else when they lose an election. And the funny but really sad thing is that when all else fails, if there is no one they can find to blame on it, they'll blame the candidate. Well, that candidate just sucked. They didn't do the right things. Well, having run several campaigns myself, you know, you have to decide pretty early on what you're going to be doing in your campaign, your entire strategy, fundraising goals, your platform, all your talking points. You have to decide this very, very early on. For Republicans and Democrats, you've pretty much got to get that nailed down by February because you're going to have to run in a primary in May. And then you can't just drop the platform you ran on and go, okay, well, now we're through the primary and here's what my new platform is. You can't do that. And so you have to then be able to transition from primary to general. And maybe some of your talking points change a little bit, but the core has to be the same. So from February to November, your campaign strategy is already laid out. I mean, that's pretty significant, right? I mean, think about that. You've got to know basically 9 months in advance of the election what your talking points are going to be on election day. And if you've ever been involved in a campaign, and I know many of you have not, I've been intimately involved with a campaign. Things change week to week. When I ran, I was accused of this and accused of that. I was, all these things thrown at you from every which way. And that's assuming you even get any attention at all. I mean, as a third party or independent, a lot of times they just ignore you, pretend you're not there. That was one of the things that I took issue with, and I tried to stay out of this race, honestly, just stay out of it, because I really didn't feel like it was right for me as the chairman of the Libertarian Party of Kentucky to get involved in this special election with no Libertarian in it. I just didn't feel it was right to get involved. So I stayed out of it, but what made me mad was when the Republicans initially were playing the, yeah, I'm running against, this is Lyon Cruz, and he's running against this Democrat. We need to stop him. Wait a second now. There's a third person in the race at this point. So you're lying to the people that you're asking to come work in call centers and working to make phone calls. Don't lie to your own people. That's just dumb. It may not affect the immediate election, but it will affect your credibility over the long term to do that. That's just dumb. There's no reason to. Tell him straight up, hey, man, he's in a three-way race. It's going to be a tough race. That's why we need your help. Nothing wrong with that. Is there? I don't think so. Be honest, especially with your most hardcore supporters. Running around telling your hardcore supporters lies that then they go out and repeat and get blown up in a discussion, figuratively, of course, get blown up in an argument because they're just way off base because the party lied to them, over the long term, is not going to lead to success because your hardcore supporters are going to get tired of being made to look like morons. Now, some of them will never get tired of being made to look morons, and they'll go out and say whatever you tell them to say and whatever. But they then lose credibility in the public as well because they get proven to be an idiot. It happens. It's sad. Because I know those people mean well. if you're one of those folks that runs around and always spews the talking points of a party without using your brain, I want to encourage you to use your brain. Please, for your own good, for your own credibility. If you want to be involved in politics, you got to think. You got to not just believe, but you got to quote Reagan, trust but verify what your party has told you. And I guess most of all, always back the best candidate. Now, in a scenario where we've seen now recently with some of my political allies and some of my personal friends, have taken positions in either Republican or Democrat committees, they're now in a position where they cannot publicly endorse anyone but a Republican or Democrat. Hey, I understand that's part of the game, right? If you've got a position on a Republican committee, that's part of it, is you got to toe the line. And you can't go out and say, yeah, I know I'm a Republican on this Republican committee, but I'm endorsing the Democrat. That ain't going to work. That gets ugly. I've only known a couple of people to survive that. But what you can do is be quiet. I mean, if somebody's obviously a bad candidate, you don't have to run around and scream from the rooftops, this guy's the best thing since sliced bread, because that hurts your credibility. There's always plenty of campaigns to be working on in a general election season. And so find somebody with credibility and work with them. I mean, seriously, there's no reason to damage your own credibility over what is basically a one-time race. I mean, are you really going to do damage to your own reputation for this candidate? How well do you know this guy? I mean, are you willing to really take the figurative bullet for this guy or gal, whoever? Don't get so wrapped up in it that you really believe these candidates actually care who you are. Now, certainly, there are people that get to know the candidates and the usually their early supporters and all that stuff. But that can't be the reason. I mean, the majority, it's kind of like the NFL draft, right? All these kids play high school football, and only a subset of them get to play college football, and then only a subset of them get to go play pro ball. And, yeah, you might end up in the subset, but chances are you won't. So are you willing to destroy your credibility over the hope of a hope that probably won't come true? I don't think that's a smart idea. But most importantly, you have to look for candidates, and that's the thing we need to be telling the general public. And I think the general public is figuring that out, that you got to tear through all the media and the sillinesses of a campaign and really look at the candidates. And, yeah, there's going to be that independent third-party person that, boy, they're getting outspent like 20-1. But every single vote they get is a vote against the Republican and Democrat. That's one message you're sending. Another message you're sending is it's a specific vote for the platform of that candidate. Now, make no mistake, getting back to Ross Perot. Ross Perot ran twice and lost twice. Never won a single electoral vote. But what did he run on? NAFTA reform, right? Balancing the budget. Remember all this? I do. I mean, I was pretty politically active and aware even in my teens, so I remember all this. And what I do remember is by the end of the 90s, this is, you know, 92, Perot ran and lost. 96, he ran and lost. By 98, 99, as Clinton's winding down his term and the Republicans have had their revolution in 94 and have had their little come-to-Jesus moment, we end up with an attempt to balance the budget. And it's a bipartisan attempt. Make no mistake, it's bipartisan. The Congress makes the budget. The president signs off on it. Bipartisan attempt, and the budget almost balanced. Now, some of that was funny money, and they borrowed it out of Social Security, which has caused problems down the line, and whatever. I mean, I didn't say they were perfect, but they tried. Why did they try? Because Ross Perot ran twice and garnered a lot of votes both times. And while he did not win, he was successful in getting an army of people behind him, and behind more specifically his platform, that we needed NAFTA reform, which was done in the late 90s. We needed a balanced budget, which was attempted in the late 90s. And because no one else has had the ability, the money, to wage such a campaign since, and because the presidential gig is so badly controlled, the debates are so critical, and they're owned by a company that is 50% owned by the Republican National Committee and 50% owned by the Democratic National Committee. So what a shock, they don't let anybody else in. And if you try to hold a different debate, the candidates just don't show up. But the point is, no one with the money, which is how Perot got around all that stuff, no one with the money has jumped in and said, hey, this is what we need to fix next. This is what we need to do next. And garner those significant votes and push policy through the ballot box. That's what's happening here. And make no mistake, the Democratic and, well, the Republican Party definitely is, and the Democratic Party is as well. No one expected Hack to get 21 and 22%. No one expected that. I don't think they did anyway. I certainly didn't, not from the outsider's view. Not to take away from Hack in any way, shape, or form. It's just you're running as an independent and you're outspent 20 to 1. You should get 5 to 10% of the vote. Just it's just the math. But to pull down that significant of a vote says, what would have happened if Hack had had $50,000 or $75,000 in his campaign? As I remember, I think Lyon Cruz ended up with about $100,000 through his campaign. It may have been a little less. I believe the Democrat ended up with $125,000 in his campaign. Imagine if Hack had had that much money, $100,000 to $125,000. Could he have won? I don't know the answer to that. I don't have good data on that. But I'll suggest to you that he could. I think he would have had a real shot had he had more money. A real shot at winning. And I don't know where the votes would have come from. If it would have come off more of the Republican or the Democrat, the general rule of thumb out there was that he was going to take more from Democrats than Republicans because he was formerly a Democrat several years ago. So, I don't know. It's definitely interesting. We live in interesting times. But what I do know is Hack made an impact. And he's going to change the way the Republicans and the Democrats, if they're smart, will change how they operate. And if they're not smart, they're going to see more results like this and numbers growing. And they'll continue to see third-party and independent candidates doing better and better in campaigns because more and more of the public is sick of the same old, same old. They want answers. No more questions, no more negative ads. They want answers. What are you going to do to fix this mess and make things better for me? That is what the public wants to know. Not about sillinesses of supposedly backing some policy 15 years ago and how that was a stupid idea. And I mean, nobody cares about those negative ads. They want a plan. How do we get out of the mess that we're in? That is what will win elections. If you want to win an election, come with a plan, a positive plan with a positive outlook for the future if the plan is implemented. And be able to, with talking points, explain how your plan could be implemented easily given the nature of everything and whatever's going on. Because if your plan's not realistic, it's not going to work. I mean, I want a puppy and a unicorn for everybody in Kentucky. Well, that's not going to do any good. There's no such thing as unicorns, and heck, not everybody wants a puppy. And do we really have that many puppies? You can't come up with an unreasonable positive plan. It has to be something real and positive and achievable. That is what will win elections. and I've been saying it for years, that this trend was coming, that it was building, and I believe it's coming true. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, I've got stuff about some lawsuits going on in the state and some other miscellaneous stuff. But, of course, if you'd like to call in, you can do so at area code 858-683-1326. And if you're listening to us on podcast, of course, you can join us any Sunday night live at 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here on the My View Matters radio network. Back in a few minutes.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. It is Sunday night. And wanted to start back kind of themed, if you will, with the break music there. Thomas Massie, my congressman, was interviewed by, I guess, The Blaze here. Yeah, The Blaze, about Obamacare. And he is stating that there are certain Republicans that are unwilling to defund Obamacare in an effort to stop it because it will delay its implementation. And by delaying its implementation, it could have electoral effects for Republicans in 2014. And, of course, he is condemning that we should be fighting to stop the implementation of Obamacare. And, honestly, I think it should have been fought, you know, years ago as the thing started gearing up last year. Prior to this year, it would have been good to start defunding it then. And, sure, I mean, is Obamacare going to fail? Yeah. It's built to fail. There's no way it's going to pay for itself. I saw a story that says that Anthem, you know, one of our main insurers, courtesy of some stupidity we did a couple of decades ago, but one of our main insurers in the state has said that premiums are set to rise about 80% next year as a result of the Obamacare and Medicaid expansion. And... folks, it's going to be ugly. Ugly. And pretty much everybody acknowledges that now. I mean, there was a brief moment in time there anyway where prior to getting distracted by other things, there were some Democrats that were starting to back off of Obamacare support and seeing the train wreck that's about to happen. And I guess what Massie is pointing out is that these guys are not acting in our best interests when they are not going to try to stop the implementation of a socialized health care plan that will be extraordinarily hard to walk back, to use a phrase that's been used a little too often lately, to walk back out of for short-term electoral gain. And I agree with them. It's that kind of thinking of, well, we'll let this stupid thing happened because we're going to gain at the ballot box as a result. Oh, great. So we're going to be stuck with a mess for the next 20 to 40 years because you guys wanted to win the election next year. I mean, really? It's going to be a disaster. It hasn't been that good in Massachusetts. And in Massachusetts, at least it's better funded than what it is here. You know, Massachusetts, they just add more taxes. In the federal plan, the fine or tax or whatever it is, penalty, for not having health care insurance is much lower than it is in Massachusetts. And even in Massachusetts, the system is broken because people just pay the fine, which is still cheaper than having insurance. And then when they need help, they just go, oh, okay, well, I'm ready for insurance now. No problem. I'm good with that. I'm allowed to do it. Not going to work. And I absolutely agree with the description that Thomas Massie puts on this short-term thinking is that it's disgusting. And I applaud Thomas Massie for coming out and laying it right out just like that. I mean, just like that. It's going to be ugly. Well, speaking of Obamacare, I spoke with David Adams last night. I was on my way back from an event, had a long drive, and so I talked to David Adams about his lawsuits that he's got going in the state. And I know David's been very busy doing other radio interviews and whatever else, so I didn't want to bug him today. But I wanted to get an update on what was going on with these so I could bring it to you. And so there's now actually two lawsuits. One lawsuit has to do with the expansion of Medicaid, and the other one has to do with the governor's executive order to just create this exchange. And so I think both lawsuits have merit. I talked to David for about 45 minutes about each case and the points of each case, and I think that there is absolute merit to both cases. What's going to be interesting is what judges get picked in the appeal, because this will get appealed. Either way, I think it's going to get appealed. Right now it's in Franklin Circuit. I think both of them are, if I remember correctly. It was kind of late. And I was soaked from head to toe. That's another story. But it was, if I remember right, they're both in Franklin Circuit Court. Whoever loses is probably going to appeal to the Court of Appeals and probably to the Kentucky Supreme Court, where it'll end up. And I guess the concern is that our judges are elected by the people, but a number of judges have been appointed by Beshear. In fact, the newest Supreme Court justice is from Northern Kentucky up here. And I do question whether or not there was some quid pro quoing going on, because she was also on the Court of Appeals, was one of the two judges, and it's my understanding that she was the swing vote, didn't know which way she was going to go, in the Bullitt County smoking ban fight, where the ruling by the Court of Appeals says that basically if it's a health-related issue, then the health departments have unlimited power, which obviously is blatantly unconstitutional in Kentucky on our state constitution. But my point is that it's going to be interesting, because I don't know the makeup of the Supreme Court at this point, and a lot of people don't. There are nonpartisan races. I know some of the judges on there who claim to be Republicans are pretty progressive. I know some of the Democrats that are on that court, or on the courts throughout the state, are very conservative. So you have a scenario where it really is going to come down to what judges are picked in the Court of Appeals. And that'll be very interesting to see. But both cases are proceeding. I believe David said that at least one of the cases is July 16th is the next hearing. And, you know, they're moving along. And as I said, I think both cases have merit. I think that each case does bring its own issue. Apparently they're trying to put the two cases together, but one is specifically about expanding Medicaid, and the other is just the creation of the exchange itself. And so it'll be very interesting to see how that turns out. And we'll be following that. We'll probably have David on at some point in the future, you know, when there's a little more to report on what's going on, sometime mid-July or something like that. One of the other things I saw in the past week or so, Shannon Denniston, I can never say his name right the first time, is in Montgomery County, and he's been fighting the Montgomery County Library Board, where, and most people have had this throughout the state, the libraries are all, the laws regulating libraries is all held within KRS 173. And you can go out to www.lrc, Legislative Resource Commission, lrc.ky.gov, and you can go under Kentucky Law over on the left side and do it by section, and you can see section 173 has everything to do with libraries, all about libraries. And one of the sections in there, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say I can't remember the number exactly offhand, Matt, right now, but it's in the later areas of it, but basically says that libraries created with a petition have to take a ballot issue, and it only takes like 100 signatures or something like that, and take it to the voters if they want to raise their tax. If it's a library that was created by, so if it was created by petition where it was just created with a petition, that takes a petition with a certain number of signatures. And as long as it has a certain number of valid signatures, then the tax rate goes into effect. if it's like one that's been created at the ballot box, it was a petition put together and it was just put on the ballot and then the library is created at the ballot box, then the tax increases must be approved by the voters. And I guess the point is that all these libraries have been using the compensating rate rule instead. They have not been complying with that section of the law. Now, the libraries claim that they don't have to because compensating rate, in theory, came later, although there were modifications to that specific law about whether or not you could increase or decrease taxes and how in KRS 173 after that came into effect. But the libraries are claiming that they don't have to do all that stuff. They only have to do compensating rate, which basically lets them take 4% per year increase in their revenue, which over the course of a decade, by the way, with compounding, 4% per year compounded over a decade is a 52% increase over the course of a decade, which is math. That's a big, big chunk of change to increase every decade. Dude, I'd love to have a 50% raise every decade. I'd be rolling in the dough. I was making good money back in 2000. Anyway, the point is, the libraries, the first two lawsuits that happened on this were up in Northern Kentucky, up here. Campbell and Kenton counties were formed by petition, and so they were supposed to be having a petition every time they wanted to raise taxes. And now, of course, the libraries are boo-hooing and saying they're going to have to close because they've lost their case. But at the same time, they're continuing forward with all these summer programs that, sure, they may be nice to have, but are outside of the core function of a library. A core function of a library being, hey, there's books here. You can read here. I mean, that's the globally accepted definition of a library, or in Europe, as they would call it, a bibliothèque in the Greek. Is a place with books. You may notice that bibliothèque, biblio, is the core there, which sounds a lot like Bible, which, by the way, is the book. That's how the Bible got its name. Anyway, the point is, the libraries are not serious about saving money. And even faced with these lawsuits, and even faced within a decision that says you can't raise taxes this way and we're rolling your tax rate back to what it was before you started doing this, they're going on as if nothing happened, and then they're going to cry and boo-hoo and claim that they have to close a library branch unless they get a tax increase. They're not serious about complying with the judge's order. They're not serious about being fiscally responsible or doing things the right way. They're going to wait until they are bankrupt and then go on a massive, oh my gosh, campaign and try to force the voters into supporting a tax increase. That's what's happening up here. Now, the same lawsuit on the same type of grounds has been now been filed in Montgomery County. And I believe the name of the group is the Citizens for Fair Taxation. That was formed to go after the library board. And essentially, that group started out fighting the library board on the fact that they were actually improperly assessing the 4% annually. That was actually their big thing from the start. It wasn't even that it was being done incorrectly. It was just that they were worried that the 4% wasn't really 4%, that they were pulling 8%, 9%, and 10% around the state. And I had heard that that was a common occurrence from a PVA that's been all over this compensating rate rule issue. I heard that a couple of years ago. The libraries have been abusing these things for years. And make no mistake, these local library boards, they're getting their numbers from down in Frankfurt, from the Department of Libraries and something or other. I can't remember what it's called now. But they're getting this information from Frankfurt. And Frankfurt's the one, the bureaucracy in Frankfurt, the one telling them, oh, yeah, you can take this rate. You can take this rate. They give them a few options. Because nobody can be a definitive option, and that way it absolves them of any responsibility. Well, we gave them three rates. I mean, if they didn't think that highest rate was right, they should have taken the middle rate. You know, that's how these guys avoid accountability down at Frankfurt. But the point is they should have been raising the taxes to begin with. And that lawsuit has now been filed in Montgomery County. I think there's going to be even more lawsuits filed. And what I'm actually hoping is that the General Assembly acts to solve the problem. And we've talked about this on this show before. I remember making that appeal that we wanted the General Assembly to solve this problem. Back in January or February, maybe it was even March, we talked about this. And unfortunately, there was a bill passed. Well, actually, fortunately, there was a bill passed that would have done this. It was unfortunately tacked onto a local sales tax measure that was built for Louisville. And what ended up happening was the bill was not sent to, what's the right word for that? It was not committed. There's a phrase for it. But basically, it passed both houses, but didn't go through what is essentially the last step before going to the governor's office for a signature or not. That bill would have made it so that there was a new type of library district that was responsible, or not responsible, but got their funding from the local fiscal court, the county government, because those are the guys that are elected. And that's been the whole thing all along with the folks in Northern Kentucky and elsewhere. No taxation without representation. These library boards are appointed. And the judge exec does technically make the appointment. But the judge exec only gets a short list, two or three people, from the Department of Libraries and Archives. I think it's Department of Libraries and Archives. Down in Frankfurt, they're the ones who make the recommendation of these three people. And in fact, I saw a story where one judge exec is actually refusing to fill vacancies on a library board because Frankfurt makes the recommendation that JE has to pick. Well, this JE is refusing to pick anybody until there's some accountability of what's going on at the library board. So this is a big deal, and it's a big deal throughout the state. You know, the people on the library side of things are trying to blow this up into a these people just hate libraries issue. But quite frankly, it's not that at all. I mean, I'm one, for instance, that thinks libraries are a good thing, that in a free society where there is an element of democracy in any way, shape, or form, it is beneficial to society to provide the means for people to better educate themselves. I think libraries do a great job of that when they focus on their core services, which is books. And you can even expand that to the modern version of a book, which is a computer, the internet. That's cool. What I have a problem with these libraries, and for instance in Campbell and Kent County, they're still doing it even though they've been told they're going to lose all this money. They're going to do it anyway. They're bringing in the bounce houses, you know, those blow-up houses and all that stuff, and serving free hot dogs and doing all this stuff. Guys, that has nothing to do with books or computers. It has nothing to do with education. It's all about having kids go hang out, bounce in a house, and eat some hot dogs. Which, given the story last week about how, I think I gave that last week, about how there are no processed meat is considered safe now, and that they're all potential cancer hazards, is kind of ironic in a way that, hey, come bounce on our bounce house and get cancer, and yeah, while you're here, you might rent a book. And the reality is a lot of the visits to the library these days are not books or computers at all, but DVDs. And not educational DVDs, but just movies. And you can make the case, well, you know, it's good for education, cultural, blah, 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 blah. Okay, but here's where I go with this. If you're going to have movies, then let's get some old movies. Let's get the ones that have been, like, out of the movie theater. They're on video. They've been through the video store. Now the video store is selling them for $1 a piece or 50 cents a piece just to dump them. Okay, maybe. But I still think that's outside the core scope of a library. A core scope of the library is books. And if you want to use the modern interpretation, computers, internet. Cool. We're good with that. But the bounce houses and the hot dogs and the bringing in all these different shows and doing these projects and doing all this stuff, while they may be worthwhile things, they should not be funded by a taxing entity that has no accountability. That's the key. It's not that what they're doing isn't worthwhile. It's that the people from whom they're taking the money to fund these things have no say in it at all. Gee, I wonder why they're mad. The funny thing is, if it was a private entity doing the stuff that was outside the scope, maybe a 501c or whatever charity, you'd probably see the same amount of money going to these projects. But it wouldn't be taken at a proverbial gunpoint without the consent of at least the majority of the people, which you can even make the claim that that's not cool, but even then, at least there's some accountability. Today, there's none. None at all. It's up to us. That's what it comes down to. We need to be pressuring our state legislators. We need to be that 21.5% that voted for HAC, that's looking for a new way, that's not going to put up with the shenanigans politically. And we're not worried about the short-term score and political points. We're looking for fixes. We want things that are legal fixes to the problem. And if there is no legal fix, then we demand that our legislators create a legal fix. You want to make it so the judge, exec, and the fiscal court controls the budget of the library? That's fine. I'm okay with that. At least then we can vote on those guys if we don't like what they're doing. Personally, I like the idea of just lowering the signature requirement, standardizing it, and putting it on the ballot every time. Direct accountability is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. And the reality is, and the library will tell you this, they don't want that solution because they don't think that anybody would ever vote for their tax. So the library board admits that no one would willingly pay the tax rate that they're collecting at force without accountability. They admit it. They admit it. And how is that not wrong to you? That is so wrong to me that they admit that they know that the public would not voluntarily choose to fund these programs. And that's why they need to remain an unaccountable bureaucracy, because otherwise they won't have the money to do the things that they want to do that the public doesn't want them to do. Oh, that's solid reasoning. Sure it is. Folks, we can. There's a lot of things we need to do in the state. But one of the things we really need to do is get control of our local governments. That's what I wanted to wrap up with, and we only have about a minute left. We have to get control of our local city and county governments. Now, those of you in Louisville, it's tough. I know. Big city. Those of you in Lexington, it's still pretty tough. Big city. But outside of Lexington and Louisville and a couple of other places, it is completely doable for us, the people, to run for office or to get behind somebody running for office who is going to be willing to take a stand against the state, willing to take a stand against the feds, willing to take a stand against the quote-unquote free money that's never free, willing to take a stand against the bureaucracy that is unaccountable, and willing to work for the public. In the public's interest, and when I say work for the public in the public's interest, primarily it means getting out of the public's way so that our small business people can thrive and survive and hire our people in the community, and we all live better lives. We can do it. These small races are much less money, and much less time, and fewer people to talk to. It is where we can hold government accountable. That is where we need to be working. Folks, we're out of time. Thanks for tuning in. Another edition of Liberty Unbridled in the books. Tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And until then, have a good week. This has been Ken Ullman on the My View Matters Radio Network.